Okay, so welcome to the program. We have the quick session here today that we were strongly advised to have at the start, and I find it like a good idea that we have some brainstorming session where we discuss what are the important open questions and the challenges that we face. So it will not be talks here, but they are mostly questions and keywords mentioned of things one should talk about in the program. And I will just start with some computational challenges. Then Matthew will mention some conceptual ones, and we want you all to contribute to the discussion. And we need one volunteer who writes down what we have and puts it on the wiki. Shall we first start with that challenge? Who is willing to put that onto the wiki? For example, Stefan, because he just walked in. Thank you for accepting. Okay, so what are the important open issues we face? And let me just start on one set, and I will not spend more than 5 minutes myself, since we want you to make the list longer then. And I'll start here, and I think that as far as I'm concerned, we face actually 3 or 4 key challenges computationally. And the first is the fermions and the sign problem. Monte Carlo, how can we deal with fermions in 2D and 3D? There's one problem related to that. So I shouldn't keep it numbers. One bullet. Let's say then another topic related to that disk, frustrated magnets that have bagged up the design problem. If you want, you can then add some more issues or more specific points. The second class of problems I say we have computationally is how to deal with the dynamics, so non-equilibrium systems. Which for short times, we have methods around for long times, and that's still a big challenge. And the third group of problems is related to the new methods we have based on quantum information theoretical ideas, namely how good are the creational wave functions like MPS states, PEPs, MER, and so on. Do they really work? We know that in principle, in one-dimensional proofs, they're good, and it's established that the DMRG works. In two dimensions, there are also some proofs now that actually one can describe the wave functions or the density matrices of the quantum system with a PEP state, for example, with the polynomial number of parameters. So the question is the number so large that it's useless, or are they really useful? So that challenge I would call, are the tensor network states, the tensor network wave functions actually useful? Or should one just do simple mind that you have the DMRG, brute force the 1D method and the apply them to 2D? So those are four questions that I wanted to start with, and I want you all now to contribute more issues to that, or have Matthew start with this list of the conceptual issues.
I mean, I want you to hold this, right?
You can hold it, put somewhere above the ground, or I can hold it for you.
My plans don't need to be held at all. I don't need to hold it.
Because it's recorded.
If you really want to record this.
Yes. Okay. Apparently. I think that one can. Yeah.
Pass it down.
Okay. Well, I just had a couple of questions. I mean, they're mostly it's sort of computational in flavor, actually, since that's the main issue in the program. But something I've been interested in, continue to be interested in, are exotic quantum phases. Okay, and there are the spin liquids, the topological spin liquids. Spin liquids, topological or critical. There are non-Fermi liquids, fermionic systems, itinerant electrons. Okay, and the open questions really are twofold. On the conceptual side, I think the main open questions are how do we characterize gapless spin liquids, the critical spin liquids? And we have various sort of slate particle constructions of critical spin liquids, but certainly don't have any sort of general characterization of those. Likewise, how do we characterize or a non-Fermi liquid states by itinerant electrons? On the more computational side, one can ask quite specific questions. For example, can we find a spin 1/2 model, let's say with SU2 symmetry, with reasonable looking local interactions, which goes into a topological spin liquid, let's say, or in any spin liquid, spin 1/2 model with SU2 symmetry, which has a spin liquid ground state.
Why has it SU2 symmetry?
It doesn't have to be SU2 symmetry. There's this Hastings theorem which requires a U1 symmetry, which would tell us that if we find a ground state which is doesn't break any symmetries, that it has to be either a topological spin liquid or gapless spin liquid. So it's sort of more guaranteed to find interesting things. So if you do have a spin 1/2 model with U1 symmetry or an SU2 symmetry, spin 1/2 per unit cell, and one can find a state with no broken symmetries, then one's guaranteed that it's some sort of exotic phase.
Matthew, what would be a good way to look at this? I mean, how would one show that it has a spin liquid ground state?
Well, that goes back to how do we characterize spin liquids.
Even topological ones?
Well, topological ones, if you're doing exact ionization, might have a ground state degeneracy on a torus. Very difficult.
It's probably very difficult to see if the system size are very small.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, that's why, I mean, that's the advantage of looking at models with U1 or SC2 symmetry. And we can, if one can show that there are really, that the ground state doesn't break any symmetry whatsoever, then one is guaranteed that it either, that there are gapless excitations, which one would then be able to see, let's say, or if it's topological, there would be, you know, ground state degeneracy.
There has been a recent proposal by Fenley. The researcher model now is P1/2 SU2, which ground state is just a parent bond superposition, equal weight superposition of line of coverings.
Okay, is that right? I'm not aware of that.
There was earlier work by, I guess, Sundin Messner, Kumar Raman, just explicitly constructed SU2.
But it was decorated lattice. In that case, it's just a square. Okay, you can argue, do you want an exotic lattice or do you want a normal lattice?
Yeah, okay, this one with Sondi. I see that's decorated. You've decorated, lattice. You put a number of spins in between each.
There were some words spoken that should be reasonable looking.
I did say reasonable looking.
I don't know what Fenley's Hamilton is. I know the other one isn't. This is bigger. I think it's pretty highly unreasonable.
I think you created pencilitis with Fenley Hamilton.
There was a question mark.
Sorry? Well, Leon, can I mention the question you raised with me?
Sure.
So Leon brought up a question which is not related to exotic quantum phases necessarily, although it could have some connection with that, but is related to quantum phase transitions. And the question was, is it possible to have a continuous Mott transition, bandwidth control Mott transition from a conventional metal with a Fermi surface to a insulator of any type? I mean, maybe it could be an exotic insulator, it could be antiferromagnetically ordered insulator. And I guess the work by Assad and Stefan's just on the honeycomb lattice would be, would be an example, except there it's the transition is from a semi-metal into an insulating state. So one could ask whether it's possible to have a transition from a conventional metal with a Fermi surface. Is it possible, Leon?
I don't know. I mean, Mott originally, if you go back way back in history, Mott originally thought it was a first order transition. It actually changed his mind late in his career.
He was in the continuum, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then there have been decades of development of various numerical methods, but they all have sort of new field character, which tend to give first order transitions. But the suggestion of a second order transition has kind of been revived repeatedly as Sentinel and Young have been re-exploring that recently. And at least they have scenarios that look internally consistent, whether there might be some, but it's far from being a really controlled calculation as far as I can see.
My understanding is these are transitions, or this is a transition from a conventional Fermi liquid metal into a very exotic insulator with a spin on Fermi C. Is that
right? Right. So the concrete proposal is if you use this, you think about this slave rotor representation interacting fermions, and then there's a single bosonic degree of freedom which can undergo a superfluid insulator transition, yeah, which would take you from a metal to a Mott insulator. It admittedly is an exotic Mott insulator, but there is pretty good circumstantial evidence for such a stay on the triangular line, because maybe other frustrated masses would have that. That's, you know, the Mott transition is one of these really long-standing topics, and that's a matter of decades, and still so many of our interesting materials are that we study in the correlated systems are systems that may be near such a transition. Even if what you see, and it's hard to probe those transitions in experiment. You don't want to have a parameter you can continuously tune, but even if in many cases it's experimentally first order, is if it's weakly first order, it'd be good to have some understanding of underlying critical points. Certainly a very exotic one if it exists, somehow kill the whole Fermi surface at one time. Very drastic kind of change in the low energy spectrum. So
Simon, you want to contribute some things?
Well, actually, I would like to open the discussion. I would give my perspective here. I probably would have some people fill in the slots.
I guess the assignment was that everyone was supposed to bring their favorite open question. So we could just call on people to remember. I'm not very good at that. I'm going to volunteer.
So I have one question, which is pretty simple. The question is whether doing Feynman diagrams to a very high order makes sense. Well, I mean skeleton, which means you are allowed to run the geometrical series.
You mean for a finite system, or you mean for a thermodynamic system? Well, Feynman diagrams are for thermodynamic system, so you immediately do the thermodynamic limit. And the question is whether all of this exercise makes sense. Well, why I'm asking, because sine problem, which Matthias mentioned, will be completely solved. In the Feynman diagrammatic space, there is no sine problem, there is only sine blessing. And the reason is just the number of diagrams blows as a factorial. Because the number of diagrams increases factorially. Formally, you say, okay, just making Feynman diagrams to high order is a useless exercise without small parameters. So you calculate more and more, and you get worse and worse. And the number of diagrams is factorial. But if you have a sine, and that's kind of the biggest misconception about the number of Feynman diagrams, that it's asymptotic series always, the misconception is that you have to take care about the sine, and sine of the diagrams can actually kill it. And at the end, you can get convergent series, or series with finite convergence radius. So at least at the level of sine problem itself, you can do Fermions, you can do frustrated magnets, you can look for Bose metal, for example, you can study interacting fermions, spin liquids. All of this is available within the Feynman diagrams. And there are tools to calculate into very high order.
And by saying you have a controlled way of understanding the sine blessing and that you know
the sine. The sine has to kill the Feynman factorial. That's what you want from sine.
But you have to calculate n-factorial to see that the sine blessing comes out, or you can...
Because if you don't have sine blessing, you will see divergence. Your series will start oscillate on a Fish scale, and you will not know what to do. But there are tools, kind of, I'm not discussing them, but there are some tools here to handle this. Actually, the toughest problem is probably boring interacting bosons with repulsions. We'll know how to do them by other means, but if you go to the diagrammatic space, that's the ultimate nightmare of doing bosons, because they don't have sine blessing, all diagrams of the same order are of the same sine, and you face this effect. But there are regularization schemes on which we are working, so probably it's not that important. So I would say just, well, the biggest problem with this one is for us is kind of, we understand how it works, but there are some projects here. So one of the questions is how you control a symplectic series with zero convergence. Whether you actually have good schemes to describe such things.
So by such techniques, can you ever access exotic phases?
Absolutely. No, I don't know how exotic, but first I found that quantum chemistry is doing electron gas on the first order. Well, I'm talking about skeleton gas. So the entire quantum chemistry and density function was sitting on the first order diagram. Nobody actually knows what is the answer for the energy density of the Coulomb gas at the second order. We're just guessing. And there is no small parameter. So everybody is doing RS of only 105. We're still at the level of first order diagram. We do resonant fermions with some success, so probably for resonant fermions, this will be the first case when strongly correlated fermi system can be mapped between theory and experiment by going to diagrams of higher order. For higher, I mean, maybe you can push it up to order 10 or 12. And you have to be lucky your answer separates and converges and you can extrapolate. But those are exactly the issues. If you go to very high order, whether you can even answer.
Question out there, not statements that it works.
Yeah, it's a question. I don't know. For any case, we don't know how it will work. We know some cases like Hubbard model, away from half filling for U over T equal 4. We can go 100 times below Fermi energy, and we think that's exactly the case when it's doing.
So there is no kind of general prescription how to deal if I.
This guy is nasty, and I would say just, well, if you don't see any reason for having asymptotic series with zero convergence radius, for example, there are arguments when you change the sign of the interaction or go to the complex plane in the interaction parameters, you say the system becomes pathological, then you know we are dealing with zero convergence radius. And Hubbard model at finite temperature, there are no pathologies. You change the sign, it's okay. It cannot collapse because you have fermions, yeah, and all interactions are on site. So you have good physics reason to believe that Hubbard model at finite temperature has a finite convergence radius, and it does. And then just going to high order, you just sit down. For other systems, probably you don't know everything. And for cases like interacting bosons, you know for sure it's the zero convergence radius, but you have tools to regularize.
So what are you saying?
It's also not hopeless.
You're saying that the Feynman diagram technique gives you the asymptotic series, but you can resum it in a way that you get a convergence.
Sometimes, well, you see, if you have zero convergence radius, you might have terms which you don't see in the perturbative expansion. So E minus 1 over G gives you zero for any Taylor series expansion. You may calculate 15 terms, you will never see this function. So even if you resum, you will never recover. So such cases, you probably have to regularize from the very beginning to make sure that you converge to something, and then your regulated field has to be taken to the limit, and then you recover.
Kind of philosophical, how much of strong coupling physics can you hope to access by basically being coupled?
Okay, the question is all of it. You just solve the problem. If you can do it properly, you just solve it.
How about using the finite size? How about using finite size to regularize? You know, but if we think of the stochastic series.
No, we have examples when we can prove it, so it's not the right
thing. No, for these problems. But I'm saying stochastic series expansion is really expanding everything from a weak coupling point of view. But then you do it to all orders.
Yeah, but you have the same problem. No.
What I'm asking is why can't one do Feynman diagrams with finite systems?
Of course you can. So it costs you nothing just to put your memento on a grid of 2 pi over L.
Wouldn't that regularize things?
Some of them probably yes, which means you'll have to have your answer for a particular system size and then take your system size to infinity. Maybe this will help. If I take interacting bosons, this will definitely not help, because you think bosons are repulsive, but in the complex plane they're attractive. Everything will collapse anyway, so you will be nowhere. You have to do something else apart from finite size to do it.
Boson, but at finite temperatures would be okay.
No, they will collapse to a point. That's exactly the answer. Any system in continuum is definitely zero convergence radius. That's what we know.
At zero temperature.
No. Any system of fermions or bosons in continuous space at any temperature is subject to collapse to a point, period. That's from Dyson a long time ago. That's why if people don't believe in the whole technique, they say, okay, if you have small parameters, exercise Feynman diagrams. If you don't, just forget it.
If you forget doing them to Feynman. You're okay.
Hmm?
If you put your system on a lattice, you're okay.
Well, yes, you are doing first regularization. If it's Hubbard model with fermions, you already kind of stop system from collapsing, because Hubbard model is essentially making truncation for the dispersion relation, saying your kinetic energy goes to infinity beyond certain momentum, pi over a, it's the lattice constant, your kinetic energy is fixed. So this helps the system from collapse right away. So at finite temperature, Hubbard model can be stable.
What's the most impressive result that's been obtained so far?
We are right now probably just, we didn't finish, but resonant gas, probably we can take it to TC. Why not below TC? Because you have to change the diagrams and you have to reprogram everything. If you have broken symmetry, you have to introduce new diagrams. So probably with resonant gas, we'll get to TC. The published result is Hubbard model for U over TE4, when we believe we can do almost any temperature we want. We went to Fermi energy divided by temperature. We already see saturation to the Fermi liquid regime. So right now, we're just programming to measure couplings in different Cooper channels just to see which channel goes unstable first. So it's a very from high feeling. Say occupation number is 0.6 total, U over T is 4. So we try to explore, OK, how fine density, and in U, we can still do it. So we leave the ground state there. P wave, D wave, I don't know, probably will fail at some point, but at least you have some precise. We do Coulomb gas, but it's not
square lattice. On the square lattice? Or?
Yeah, we do it on the square lattice. Well, there are some advantages. You write down one code, and it's
on the triangle.
20 lattice, any dimension.
On the triangle?
It doesn't cost us anything. We can try triangular. Because in Feynman diagrams, you have lattice in terms of the dispersion relation. Give the dispersion relation. That
I can see we'll have to get you to give a talk on that.
Maybe Boris will give a talk. He's coming.
And the weather's idea of putting one of them in next week.
So what exactly goes wrong when you start increasing U? What do you see?
Oh, well, OK. There are Feynman diagrams, but you have to exercise all analytic skills you have. For example, if you do, say, fermions with sufficiently large U, let's call them stupid diagrams. Stupid diagrams are simply lattice. You make U very large, and two particles simply couple on the same side for a very long time. It's just nothing special, but if U is large, that's what you will face first. And they are behaving like U minus U squared plus U cubed minus U4, unless you do this analytically. Your code will break, not break, but it will sample tensor-order diagrams for nothing. And this is, well, this is sign blessing, but it's also sign problem. I'm not saying just, well, if you want to kill n factorial, you have to sample n factorial times just to get unity. So this will be just kind of sign problem you can handle or tolerate for a while. But you will be tolerating sign problem just to do the ladder diagram, not the interesting theories. So this type of kind of pieces, you have to do analytically and construct your code by having key matrices everywhere instead of the Bayer interactions. But this requires doing the job. So we did U equal 4. We see that going further is difficult. But this is also doable. You can formulate all diagrams in terms of key matrices. But this has to be done. And there are also kind of rules how you can combine pairs of diagrams to cancel the sign. So there are many layers of things.
So we'll have to talk on that, I think.
So can someone summarize the steps MERA situation into being, in a sense, what are the current, what is the current status of, let's say, what people have simulated, how does it look like on one side, and then you mentioned there is theorem now.
So that's your question, what is the current status?
What's the current status? More precisely.
That's essentially what this question implies, yes. And I think there should be talks on that as well. And basically, the current status is that we have, that so far we have other methods that are more successful.
Yeah, but for some systems you cannot apply them, like for the systems of Feynman.
Yes, but we don't. But for example, for the fermions, the status is that the best PEPs and MERA wave functions for fermions are worse than the simplest wave functions you can write down when you think about the physics. Like for the Hubbard model or the teacher model. There are wave functions published since 20 years that are lower in energy than the best PEPs or MERA wave function. It's not generic, but if you put in the physics that you think there is, you'll get better at the moment.
I mean, I think really one should ask a more general question there, not just do PEPs and MERA work, but what are good compact variational wave functions for, I mean, both exotic systems and normal systems. I mean, even sort of electronic structure systems.
Good.
It's very hard to write down good wave functions.
Good flexible generic wave functions. Good.
Sure, or even, I mean, good compact wave functions that are easy to work with.
What does compact mean?
Well, it means it has only a couple parameters in it, right? Yeah. You're reasonably variable for it. But it's no good to have a couple parameters and not be able to evaluate the energy either, right? You want kind of compact and workable.
You're asking, is this an input question for variation Monte Carlo, or?
Well, if such things existed, it could be an input question for variation Monte Carlo, but it's also a generic conceptual question as well, right?
Can you generate such?
Can one write down compact, simple wave functions for exotic states or even boring states? I mean, even
yes,
the electronic structure things, it's very hard to write something down that captures more than 95% of the correlation energy.
What do you mean by can one write down? If you say, can you describe it with the polynomial number of degrees of freedom, then the answer is yes, perhaps. That's what Hastings thinks.
Well, the point is not only that you can write it down, but it's easy to work with this wave function. You can quickly evaluate things.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, compact and easy to use.
But that's what I meant by useful.
Yeah.
But they don't have to be tensor networks, right? It could be something more sophisticated or just totally
good point.
One question here. So just to add to something here,
yeah.
So most of the time when you work with this variational wave function,
yes,
zero temperature ground
yes
state. So how is there a way to work with finite temperature properties with like full back acceleration vector and some variation? That's the interesting thing.
Yes.
So I mean with very few number of parameters, can you write down because they are variational.
So here, let's extend this for ground state and finite temperatures.
One can write down a variational density matrix.
Right,
yes. And we do this on occasion. It's obviously
so ground state and density matrices for finite temperatures.
Right.
Yeah.
There have not been many studies like that
for
interacting
fermions.
I understand that this kind of matrix can be.
They can. Yes. They can, but they can. But I'm still looking, for example, for one killer app, one application where we see yes, the method has solved an important open problem that we could not solve otherwise. We're working hard on trying to find that. We failed so far, but they're getting better and better and better. But the scaling is just horrible. These methods, they're not really compact or it's evaluated in that sense.
Well, I think we're even another step below that. You know, we have interesting problem that we know the solution of that, you know, we cannot solve with these techniques.
Like for the Heisenberg square lattice anti-Fermat commitment as a simple example, the best estimate we have for the magnetization in the Pepsomera is off by 10%, and spin wave theory gives you the magnetization to 1%. In a quick and simple calculation. And that's what we have to solve first. Can you solve a Heisenberg model? Can you solve a simple gap spin system and work well there? Find the critical point accurately. In Ising models, it's possible, but in Heisenberg models with gapless nodes, it must be very hard. It might be hard to find the ground state, or it might be hard to capture it in a PEPS or MERA, we don't know that yet.
How about capturing just a Fermi C?
That's hard.
That's hard.
That's hard. Yeah. Three fermions are hard, yes.
Relation between variational wave functions and effective field theories for the places. I mean, we sometimes say that we write out in Gramsci mm-hmm. wave function, then we say, okay, this. We also say that if there is a Hamiltonian for the ground state, the excitation spectrum will have certain some structure, right? Other than take some spin liquid. But we write some variation wave function for spin liquids. And we also claim to know the field theory sometimes.
So that's another question. The relationship between
the ground states and
ground states
and reasonable excitations.
The ground states and excitations and channel does not.
And
unless you have an effective field theory that couples them.
Right.
Between ground states and excitation. So, and effective field theories.
What does the question mean? Do you want a general relation?
Not a general relation. Suppose I have some, there are many claims. Suppose I have some projected Fermi circuits. People think it's a human spin liquid. That is a caricature of that. But how much should I believe that? There is a proof for that. So this needs to be
a general question.
In general, that's none. That's the answer.
Well, one can ask. There are some generalities, right? Yeah. Case things has some proof that
you have
a gap, then you have exponential correlation.
No, if you have power law correlations, you can't have a gap.
Well, it's the same.
That's
yeah, okay, yes.
This universe. So there are some general results.
Yeah, yes.
We could be ambitious and ask for even more general results.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But probably when you start talking about the rather fancy effective field theories, it's hard to expect to get anything too general.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to mention a different direction of many-body physics that I think hasn't been broadly considered yet, and that's the upcoming many-body theories of ultra-cold molecules. I mention them because these ultra-cold molecules have a tremendous number of internal degrees of freedom, and so there's an interplay between external degrees of freedom and, you know, several different interconnected spin manifolds, for example, within each molecule. And there's, you know, there are a number of questions around that. One is simply the practical simulation question: what is the best way to simulate such systems? Even if you put them in 1D, you have a very large number of internal degrees of freedom. And so, suppose you were doing TEBD or TDMRG or any other MPS method, the on-site dimension is quite large. So, is it enough to just enforce some conservation laws? Is there a better way to simulate this problem? What are the effective area laws for problems like this when you don't just have a spatial degree of freedom, but you have this big internal degree of freedom, you know, with, you know, 100 dimensions or more? So that's the simulation question which I'm dealing with in my own research, and I think is an important one, as I say, for upcoming ultra-cold physics, you know, the lattices. And then there's a basic physics question, which is what is the most interesting physics of these systems? You know, one strategy is to try to make them look like some known condensed matter system, get a spin liquid, something like that. But, you know, you can ask what is the interesting new physics that ultra-cold molecules will produce that might give us insight into things like, emergent properties at different scales, complexity, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think the point is, you know, right now they're just doing that, starting to do a 1D lattice for these ultra-cold molecules. They have only the simplest molecules, but I think we can easily expect within, you know, a couple of years to be seeing the sorts of systems that were talked about in last week's conference. And so I think in theory we could be ahead of the experimentalists and be thinking about where they would be going.
Many people that have been quiet so far, and the homework was to come up with a question.
I will give next week a talk on bosonic dynamical mean field theory, which is a dynamical mean field theory for bosons, which was producing excellent results for 3D Bose-Everett model. Now the question is if this can be extended to mixtures, Bose-Fermi mixtures, and if it's a good starting point for doing this non-equilibrium stuff, if you can do something. But dynamics, real-time dynamics of bosons on top of the mean field. Now I think, you know, because the prospects look so far good, that should be tried. And, so, and it was also possibilities to combine with fermions. We have these mixtures, those Fermi mixtures. You can do models of Hooper pairing, and of course you can then also do not just single-sided impurity clusters, and that moment you have again a parameter you can control. So I think it's a net
energy. How about how useful is DMFT?
It's huge.
DMFT and variance.
Yeah, it's huge, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't understand something what you said. You said real-time dynamics on top of the mean field.
No, so far what we've done is not very useful, but it looks promising. Maybe.
Are those real-time dynamics close to mean field? I mean, is that the idea? And if so, is it any different from doing some of these sort of Hartree-Fock-Guglielmo theories where you have mean field fluctuations around them? I mean, how is this an improvement?
It would be an improvement.
Why?
It's not clear how it works.
Why? Because you can treat the local dynamics exactly. The path is dynamic, but it's not clear.
Matthias, can I add to your question or just refine it?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
How can we benchmark it?
We have a paper.
Have we tested
Yes, yes, we can. We have papers on that.
No, I think the question is, which regime is DMFT controlled?
No, but the question is how can we invent for it? Simply by combining two new exact methods that you will invent for us.
Yeah. I mean, you mean with the finite spatial dimensions, or, I mean, what's the comparison? You know, in infinite spatial dimensions, it isn't. So finite dimensions.
Yes.
Okay. That's exactly that Ross did.
It's not a very physics way to construct it. It's really more like a computer science way to do it.
Bison has all, you say, maximal entropy or what?
Well, up to a factor of 2 or whatever. Right? I mean, the entropy is maximum up to a constant. But you know, the Schmidt factor is probably almost maximum.
So we have many people here who did not pose a question yet. Stefan.
So I have two questions. One is for non-equilibrium, which would be, can we have an efficient simulation method that directly targets the stationary state so that we can approach it not by doing real-time evolution, but really work in a stationary situation without a side problem, overcome the side problem, something like that. Mm-hmm. The other one is more conceptual. Maybe the answer is no, but I don't know. I ask many people. But so if I say I have two, let's say, topologically different states, how is that? How well defined is that question? I mean, does that depend on how my Hamiltonian space looks like? I mean, which path are allowed to go from one topological phase to the other? Because if I have an order parameter, I can, you know, just measure it and I see the phase transition. But if I don't have the order parameter, how do I detect the transition? And how much does that depend on the path in my Hamiltonian space? I don't know, maybe the answer is no.
Two topologically distinct states.
Well, you say that they are topologically distinct, but how do you actually know, and how do you see the transition between them, and how does that depend on the path that you allow in your Hamiltonian space, and observing symmetries, or like that?
Oh my God, what's the question?
You should always
sort of.
Yeah.
So we know that there has to be a phase solution between the two.
Well, sometimes you have states, right? But you want to know, do they belong to the same phase? And there might be there's a path in some Hamiltonian space that continuously takes you from one to the other. But if you're unlucky, you just, you know, allow your parameters to vary in such a way that you cross a phase transition. So you might say, oops, there are different phases. But in the topological, how do you know? Because there's no order parameter.
But if you characterize the topological state, mm-hmm. right, then you know they're distinct. They're granted of different phases.
There are different notions of this, right? I mean, there are examples like what you talk about, for instance, lots of different notions of what topological means. Like, it's topological insulators, which are very different from topologically ordered phases. You know, there you can define, let's say, two states which are topologically distinct, but only in the presence of time reversal. You break time reversal, you go around and you connect them.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's an example like that. Also in 1D, Haldane gaps, there's the Sasaki.
But in 2D, you should have that, you have phases which have different types of anionic excitations. You shouldn't be able to go from one.
Yeah, so there are also examples where there's no perturbation that you plunge, which connects them. Just to say that I don't think that question has one unique answer.
So how can you
application is quite elaborate.
It's also what symmetry you allow to break when you go from one.
No, but it could be possible without any restriction on symmetry.
But if you impose restrictions, there will be more categories.
Of course, but I think in 1D, if you don't put restrictions, you don't get the same phases, basically. Whereas in 2D, even if you don't put restrictions, topological phases should be the same.
Right.
But
just
because
there is no local.
Probably you need a rogue idea, at least.
Of course, you want a local Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
How local it can be?
Well, it shouldn't diverge. I guess if you impose continuity properties, it's probably some maximum length.
So yeah, since Leo mentioned in 1D Hoden phase, if you preserve enough symmetry, then topological phase can be characterized by the degeneracy of entanglement spectrum. That's robust. And to break that degeneracy, you need a phase transition. That's one clear example.
Yeah,
but in 2D, yeah.
There are still accidental degeneracies even there, so you have two distinct topological states with the same entanglement spectrum. So
we shouldn't disregard symmetry. Symmetry is important in real systems. You can simplify your life as a theorist by saying I'm only going to consider phases that are distinct, irrespective of symmetry. But that's there will be a very limited amount of phenomena in nature that you'll be able to understand that nice.
We have a few more people that should say something. Atif, do you have something?
I was going to suggest the role of impurities in general in, say, how do they affect quantum spin liquids? What are the local effects around impurity, which can be measured, for example, by NMR or by STM? Can that actually allow us to tell whether you have a quantum spin liquid or something else? And also, what are the global effects of impurities? I mean, do they destroy the phase?
In various phases, because that is not that it can just the answer again.
Anyone else?
Yes, I can help. I would like to ask a question in the first part, in the fermion part.
Fermions, yes.
So in the existing quantum color we have now, so except doing this local optic update of this auxiliary field, I see the standard determinant of Monte Carlo, is there like a way to do cluster update, like with the boson, so that we can do really large system and approach?
There is a Wurm algorithm for fermions and has been published a few years ago.
Yeah, but it's like really as controllable as let's say this determinant or thing.
Yes.
Well, determinant on Monte Carlo, you can do 1,000 sites.
Okay, the problem of why you can't do big assistance is that these methods scale with the cube of the size, so that's more the limitation, that and the same problem. But yes, in some cases, like for the it's the cost of the warm tide update, it was important on the, it was used. So here the question is kind of which methods do we have for fermions and where do they work and where do they work? And we mentioned already the metal KMC. We have the diagrams, we have the DMFT. Yes?
What about bosons? We don't have any determinant in Monte Carlo for bosons because it's a permanent. So then
yes.
You can't do local updates or.
So the reason why you don't sum the bosons into a permanent is that the permanent cannot be evaluated efficiently and so one just samples it, and so you don't need it. And the scaling then is linear. It just doesn't help if
you. It's no different. You do the same for bosons as for fermions. Who cares? But for bosons, sometimes you have a method which is a million times more efficient.
Sometimes, but not always.
Well, when there's no gauge field attached to it, then it's no problem. And the permanent wouldn't help you solve the sign problem. The only reason one uses the tummy. And for the fermions is to partially solve the same problem. For bosons, there's no reason why you should use the net for that, because there's the same problem, or when you have a phase problem, that will not help you with the phase problem.
one can ask, does understanding the nodal structure of some of these wave functions help you know some of the permanence for them? Or can one understand, okay, if you know the nodal structure, you can see the nodal. Can one understand sort of qualitatively the nodal structure?
So can one understand the nodal structure and then use some fixed nodal? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about transport? I would like to pose transport as an interesting topic, maybe to one equilibrium. So transport in spin systems.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple question, for example.
We should continue the non-equilibrium part somewhere. we desperately need to clean it up on the wiki. Transport.
Very simple question, for which models can we calculate this in a good way? And with what methods? We have very few systems for which we can do that. And are there efficient numerical methods, for example, to do this in two dimensions?
That's for the through the weight. Spin through the weight.
Spin through the weight, yeah. There is the thermal through the weight, there's the spin through the weight.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say something about the regular part of this conductivity?
Probably mainly probability continuation. Everybody is having this problem.
Yes.
During the various.
How can one solve an EPOS problem?
What was the question with
that? Analytic continuation using strong numerical weight.
It's an EPOS problem, but we still want to do it. So what's the best way of doing it? With some extra physical insight. We like challenges. Yes.
So I just give you an arbitrary wave function. How much topological information can you extract from it? Suppose I tell you it's topologically ordered, but I don't give it in any tensor network or any other form. I just give it in a bunch of this, in as the representation of the spin model. Then, like this Rényi entropy,
yeah.
If you calculate, we know that the whole entanglement spectrum captured very little. That even any Rényi entropy captured as much as any other
mm-hmm.
trace rotary power and is same as trace rotary power and ground as far as topological information is concerned. So can you calculate some other quantity which can tell you about in user quantum dimensions or gradient or using roots or possible particles?
In general, very little.
Yes.
And the reason I know that is that they actually constructed a quantum state, which is a ground state of two Hamiltonians. One is topological, the Turing code, the other one is gapless. Same exact ground state. So basically, if I only give you the ground state,
yeah.
You have learned very little about
this. But what is the minimum information on scanning speculative gap than we can do?
It's even worse. Sure, in a bosonic system ground state, it's saying you will never tell me whether particles are distinguishable or not.
Someone said earlier that whether you have a gap or gap to gapless is very different. You have odd law correlations or
no? It actually goes the other way. So if you have a gap, then you have to have short range correlations. But if you have short range correlations, that does not imply a gap. And that's sort of an example of that.
If you're
looking at
the
spectrum
in your case, you talk
about
the ground state.
The ground state is the same, so whatever you do to the ground state, you extract exactly the same information. So you don't learn anything about the spectrum. It's all equal time correlations.
Is the degeneracy also preserved?
Not on the torus. So not on the torus.
You
have to be careful. Yeah, the degeneracy is high on the torus for the gapless case.
I think you can predict samples where it stays the same.
What?
I guess you can put examples on the degeneracy stays the same, but it becomes gapless.
I mean,
I think you can look for like the
perhaps,
or so.
I can't correct.
I'm not sure.
Although I will find it surprising.
I played with this at some point. I had the impression it gets scandalous and the counterinference is necessary. But
suppose I assume, suppose I give you an iteration information, it's scattered. Then you have stage.
So, this, the, how much information is there in the Gaussian wave function? Is there in a wave function?
Yeah.
If it's an infinite system, it's an infinite amount.
Infinite. System of fractions, the total information. But can you extract some robust topological property if it is a gap system?
But how much topological information can you extract from? Gaussian wave
function.
Masaki, since you take pictures of this, you could actually help Stefan.
I can send the picture.
There's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek question, which is, you're developing all this wonderful machinery and different computational techniques. So what model should you apply them to?
what model should we simulate?
Good question.
Mine.
And the answer is not the Isaac model.
Do first.
So it means what are the interesting models that we should look at? It's the Hubbard model first.
This is, I mean, we know the answers.
You say tongue in cheek, but pretty important for this program.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's not the only way I could hope to contribute.
And you can also think of new representations of quantum states or models that might be useful for the methods. Like there are new ways to do diagrams, for example, and the political tricks.
Yeah, it's a really important question. So if you say Bose net, I would like to know what parameters for the anisotropy between A and B for different spin directions we have to use. What's the best shot?
Well, I guess it's...
Because you can try something, it fails, but maybe you didn't use the right parameters.
If I knew for certain, then I wouldn't need you.
At least I know some intuition about what are the better parameters.
This guy is there.
Just have to go online and watch his talk from 3 weeks ago.
It's important. Okay, I, yeah.
No. Let's keep it that way. Let's keep it that
way. Well, that's because we're back to starting point.
Simon.
Well, I guess the question, Leon's question, is the question on the virtual. Where is the real interface between the numerical people going, off like crazy, and the conceptual people helping to contribute. So
we should circle this in that.
Exactly.
exactly. So I think all the progress in frustrated magnets has come from exactly this, an answer to the above question. Because we cannot do frustrated magnets per se, but we can do all sorts of effective models. You know, this is exactly where we need, you know, help in understanding. You know, so Chikuka is the right model. It's giving you a good description of the grounds of money flow as a person in life. And then we can actually do something. Yeah. But per se, we can oftentimes do not much of these things. So, but we have other situations which are like that. Yeah. So where you can get really good guidance in where you should be doing numerics.
Okay. So maybe as an experimentalist, you should also have, don't forget the question is that what are the things that you can really observe from these models? But I guess it's no use of making all these models and distinguishable observables in here.
What can you observe? How can these phases be identified?
No, but there's two there's two realities here.
Real observable that is manageable, you know?
But Roger is answering this question with different realities in the experiment, and he says, you know, we should be looking at, you know, scaling or whatever.
With the real probes,
which you would never see in the experiment.
Yeah. So what are real probes into these models?
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, it's nice, like, you know, everybody talks about general Gibbs examples, but nobody can tell me how to measure it.
Yeah, I think there is some you can do inelastic neutron scattering. Inelastic neutron scattering, we will see for magnetism to power. You will see definite answer, either it is a spin liquid or something else. And so I probably I'm not sure. I think one of the questions which was.
Will inelastic neutron scattering really rule out any type of order in the system?
Why?
Will it really rule out any type of order in the system?
You have to look a bit more to symmetry breaking and symmetry. We can go further than what has been done up to now.
Yes.
And that might be another question too. I think Leon was opening this possibility and some others. Probably, I don't know. If there is some generalities, for example, to the classification of Zauberm when of the different spin liquids, can we find out observable? And I don't know. I've tried to go in that way, not in fermionic, but in bosonic slave particle system. And in fact, you can perhaps answer yes. But it's difficult. I'm sure it's difficult. For example, and I'm not sure it's universal. But one may do some step towards some more questions, practical questions for experimental.
I think numerical may be possible. I mean, if we do some numerical calculation, maybe it's possible because you can.
Yes, but the question is experimental probes. Don't look at ground state generalizations or things like that.
Why tell me how measure ground state
there
are some schemes. Well, you can ask if there's no gapless edge state in a fractional quantum Hall state, how to observe its topological order. It might be in part. If we cannot do transport experiments, rely on the edge states.
But for the non-chiral automatic order, you even don't have any models.
Right, it's very hard to probe experimentally, even if it exists.
So should we add another question here, connection to reality?
Or just boxing
in the back. Project on the real axis.
What connection between lava land and reality?
which is really good, I guess.
And I think with that, we should go back to the real world and start talking, discussing about these questions. Think about them, solving them in the program. We have 8.5 weeks to go.